Ohio's primary election is May 6th, and the race for Cincinnati mayor is on the ballot. Incumbent Mayor Aftab Purval has two challengers, Cory Bowman, who's the half-brother of Vice President J.D. Vance, and former Procter & Gamble Company employee Brian Frank, whose slogan is Make Cincinnati Great Again. The top two vote-getters will go on to the general election November 4th. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the candidates and where they stand on the issues are Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterich and WBXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Welcome back, Chris and Howard.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Lucy.
Chris, tell us briefly about the three candidates running for mayor and their backgrounds.
Yeah, so obviously Mayor Aftab Purval is running for re-election. He will be running for his second term. Cincinnati mayors are limited to two terms, so it will be his final term in office.
If he wins, barring
some odd thing happening, you know, maybe the voters decide, hey, 3-4 terms, whatever. But no, it's not going to happen. And so before this, he was Hamilton County Clerk of Courts. He ran an unsuccessful race for the first congressional district against Republican Steve Chabot. And so that is his background. Cory Bowman, you know, people know him as the half brother of the vice president, J.D. Vance. He is a pastor at the River Church in the West End, and he also is owner of the King's Arms Coffee Company, which is also in the West End. So he's a small businessman and a pastor. Brian Franks, a former Procter & Gamble employee, and has done work for a number of people over the years, including the late coroner Odell Owens, excuse me. So that's kind of the baseline background for each of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Brian Frank was a loaned executive to the city for
several times.
Okay. Yeah. Howard, the mayor's race is officially nonpartisan, but talk about where each of these candidates is coming from politically.
Well, the two Republicans are pretty far to the right. You know, obviously, the incumbent mayor is a Democrat and opposed to much of what's going on in the White House these days. And, you know, you got to remember, too, that this is a city which, and I can't predict, what's going to happen on May 6th, but this is a city that voted 77% for Kamala Harris last fall. It's a heavily Democratic city. It's not elected a Republican mayor. And, you know, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. We got an email related to that from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, this in part, 100% occupancy of virtually every elected office by a majority party, historically relatively low voter turnout driven by a motivated core base whose preference is for the sample ballot being the information source as the candidate selection driver, all tied together with a strong ground game will take place this fall when the formality of the primary is behind us. Based on these facts, it is easy to predict at this early date which way the election for mayor will land in the fall. Chris, you know, Howard mentioned that the two challengers to Mayor Purval are both Republicans, though this is technically a nonpartisan race. Are these serious Republican contenders?
They're as serious as a Republican contender can be, I think. I mean, they are, you know, as Howard said, they're conservative Republicans, and that is probably not going to go over very well in terms of, you know, the electorate. However, you know, I would say that, you know, for example, Cory Bowman, what I have seen him campaign on, and he is really focused on locking up the small sliver of Republican electorate that we have in the city. He believes that is his ticket out of the primary. He's probably right about that. And his connections to the vice president are going to help as well. But, you know, I suppose you could have, you know, had a Republican, a more moderate Republican like Liz Keating, whose Republicanism is really about fiscal issues and not so much about social conservatism and the issues that really animate the base of the Republican Party. She probably would be in a better position. Someone of that character, someone of that profile would be, you know, maybe a little bit better positioned. But as Howard noted, this is an overwhelmingly Democratic city. In other cities across the country, you know, Los Angeles and New York come to mind. We've had Republican mayors in overwhelmingly blue cities, but they have been typically focused on, you know, municipal matters like basic services and, you know, fiscal matters, not the kind of things that animate both parties these days, which include social issues and, you know, really, you know, kind of the culture wars that we're seeing. So Bowman has kind of talked about those things. He talks about snow removal. He talks about pothole issues, all of which I think, in a different year, if another Democrat was running against the mayor, that might be a more potent campaign. And so he's kind of playing the music that is going to best position him, but he's still handicapped by his political background and his conservative beliefs, I think.
Hmm. Howard, do you think the strength of the Democratic Party in Cincinnati and really at this point Hamilton County as a whole, is that why we don't have other Republicans like the Liz Keatings of the world running in a race like this?
Sure. I think that's true. And I agree with Chris. I have a feeling with Corey Bowman, and I have reason to feel this way, but he's really setting himself up for something down the road, possibly a run for Congress. there's precedent for this in the past. This was, they're looking at the first congressional district, and I've heard some rumblings of Republicans promoting him for running against Greg Landsman, but we'll see. The bottom line is this is a Democratic city, period. I don't think running as a MAGA Republican is the key to success, and I don't care who you're related to. And I don't think Democratic voters are much inclined to take a relative of J.D. Vance as their role model.
We're talking about Cincinnati's mayoral primary and the candidates who will be on the May 6th ballot. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Corey Bowman was asked in an Inquirer debate about never voting in a Cincinnati election. He reportedly said he didn't know when they're held.
Well, I would recite that the Inquirer just posted that in the last mayoral election, I believe it was 26% of voters that showed up. So you're talking about 73% of voters that just don't see a point in it or are unaware of it. And so if there's anything that results in me putting my head in the ring is basically just to say, hey, let's get as many people involved in this process as possible. Let's care about our local government, and I'll be the first one to do it.
Howard, what do you think about that response, basically pointing to low voter turnout? I mean, he's seeking elected office in Cincinnati.
I don't know. I don't see it as much of an excuse. I mean, you could be part of the 26% that did show up.
Okay. Well, what do you think, Chris?
It has some resonance with me. I mean, I spend a good amount of my job writing about things that go on at City Hall and trying to illuminate what our elected officials are doing. And we do find that not very many people care, at least enough to go to the ballot box. And so there's something to what he's saying there. You do expect that people who seek these offices are attuned to them enough to go vote. But as far as the hardcore people who are, going to vote him out of the primary, likely, I don't think they're going to care.
Hmm. Well, last night.
He hasn't been in the city very long.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years at the most. So, he was living in Florida before this. So he's yet to make that connection.
Hmm. Okay. Well, last night, a city council committee voted to approve the Hyde Park Square development, Prior to the vote, here's what Brian Frank had to say about connected communities and zoning at that Inquirer debate.
I'm just frustrated that even though we've got this new zoning regulation, we're very quick at city council to go right into a plan development, which takes away all the responsibility of developers to follow the existing zoning, which is now the law, and they can throw it all out. And that's what we're seeing in Hyde Park, is they don't want to even adhere to the much less restrictive code that we have with connected communities, and they're asking for two more stories or three more stories to go up even higher than what they should be allowed.
Chris, how is zoning playing into this race?
I think it's going to be a bigger factor in the city council races. Yesterday, what we saw, and I don't know if we want to get into the nitty-gritty of what he said, but let's talk the political side of it first. But I do think this is going to be an issue in the council races. We are still waiting to see exactly who is going to be on the charter committee slate. Of course, the charter committee is being led by Steve Gooden, the former city council member, a Republican as well. And they have made the both the Hyde Park project and connected communities, which is a law that kind of allows more development along transit lines, more dense development such as 2, 3, and 4 family apartments to go along transit lines. And I do expect that to try to, you know, the charter committee candidates will try to inject that into the council races and make that an issue. Bowman and Frank are both opposed to connected communities and to the Hyde Park development. But again, I think they run into a brick wall given their political backgrounds. I don't think enough people are going to say, well, Mayor Pureval supported both of those and really was the champion of connected communities, and we're going to throw him out of office. I'm not sure that's going to have as much resonance in the mayor's race as it may have in the city council races.
Well, speaking of Mayor Pureval, this is what he had to say in response to a question about connected communities.
The important point of being an elected official in this city is, of course, taking account of public opinion and public feedback, but ultimately have to do what you think is right. And it is a fact that Cincinnati Zoning Code was antiquated. It is a fact that Cincinnati Zoning Code, because it was so regulated and bureaucratic, was choking off housing. And I ran 4 years ago with a mission to create more housing in our community. Every single poll that you see says we need more housing in the city of Cincinnati, that it is a crisis. And I will stop at nothing to make that a reality. And as a result of all of our changes, including the zoning code changes, in just 3 years, we have created more affordable units, 3 times more affordable units than the previous 5 years. Everyone says they want more housing until you try to put it in their neighborhood, and then everybody doesn't want it. And that is why we have a shortage of housing stock, and we will continue to push forward to prioritize housing.
This leads me to an email that we just got from Alexis. Alexis writes, I've been struggling to support Mayor Aftab with his priority for development at the expense of community engagement, connected communities in the recent Hyde Park issue. I haven't found him to be supportive of community councils or community-led infrastructure. I'd love to see leadership that recognizes voices of development opposition that aren't immediately labeled as NIMBY, or not my backyard, ignorance. Feels like bad faith leadership, and I'm ready for a change. Would love to see Vice Mayor Kearney up there soon. What do you think, Chris? I know you said you think this will be more of a factor for council races than the mayor, but is this a weak spot for the mayor?
It's probably going to cost him some votes. I don't doubt that. There is an interesting fracture that has occurred between the city council and the community councils. And I'm going to generalize a little bit more probably than I should, but I would say this about the majority of city council's view of the majority of community councils. I think they increasingly view them as a group of folks who are dedicated to their communities, volunteer, spend a lot of time, but also represent the single family homeowner perspective. And when the council backs up from a public policy standpoint, they look at a city whose home ownership rate is less than 40% of the city, and we have 60% renters. And they're very focused on what they view as a housing crisis. We don't have enough housing for the people that we have here, which is kind of stunning given the population loss that we've had over the last 60 years. But the population has grown enough and we've lost so many units that there is a problem there and prices are going up. And so their viewpoint is, you know, we cannot cater only to single family homeowners who populate these community councils, the vast majority of them. There are different levels of that in community councils. Hyde Park, overwhelmingly single-family homeowners. Clifton, overwhelmingly single-family homeowners. Northside, however, for example, I believe their community council is currently led by a renter. And so they have embraced rental housing and particularly trying to get affordable housing in Northside. So when they back up and look at the community council system, I think they see something that is not entirely representative of the city and of the neighborhoods that they are representing. And so that is kind of the fracture that has occurred in city government and kind of leads to the policy choices that they are making right now.
We will continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll hear about a proposed funding cut to a program aimed at improving Ohio's water quality. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Cincinnati's mayoral primary and where the candidates stand on the issues. My guests are WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson and Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterick. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. At this Inquirer debate that we've referenced a couple times, the candidates also were asked about building a new arena. Here's Corey Bowman.
How do you think it should be paid for?
By the city.
Okay, not by the city.
We can help facilitate when it comes to the capacity, maybe even the parking garages, but I do not believe that it needs to be taken on by the taxpayers until we realize that we have a crippling infrastructure and we need to focus on that first.
All right.
And here's Brian Frank.
I do believe that we need a new arena. I've been in the current arena that we have, and it is very dated. It's not a pleasure to go in there. It does suit a purpose, though, and I think it's very important that we recognize how important that arena is to the banks. I don't know if you've been down to the banks, but it's really unfinished. Most of the areas close to Paycor Stadium are still vacant.
And here is the mayor in his response.
Do we need an arena? Yeah, we do. With the advent of remote work, it is incumbent upon us to make sure that our urban core, that our downtown transitions from purely an economic or commerce center into a true neighborhood. How we pay for it, I think, is a really difficult question. I think it should be paid for on the private side, but it's unrealistic to believe that we're going to get an arena in Cincinnati that is only using private dollars. Certainly the city and the county working together, if we're able to come together and figure out a capital stack that works, we'll have a role in that.
Howard, do you have a sense for which message is resonating the most with voters when it comes to this issue of a new arena and how it should be paid for?
Yeah, I think that all three of those candidates had reasonable positions on this that you can make a good argument for. I don't know that the public itself has sorted this out yet. And I agree with Chris that these issues are going to come up in the council campaign this fall. And we're not going to know who those candidates are for sure until sometime in August. So, yeah, it's you could make a good argument for either any one of those positions, but I just don't think it's going to be decided in this May 6th mayoral primary.
Well, one of the candidates, Brian Frank, has questioned whether city manager Cheryl Long has the necessary qualifications to be city manager.
Well, I misspoke when I said she was hired because she's DEI and she should be fired. So I apologize to that. But I still find that she's incompetent. You know, like from the day she started, she told us that she was living in Clifton, near where the mayor lives, you know, in that neighborhood. And come to find out, she wasn't really living there. She was living way up in North College Hill, which is not part of the 52 neighborhoods. And we know that because she took the city-owned car up there, left the key fob in it, went into her house, and came out in the morning and found the car was gone. And instead of being upfront and open about it and calling North College Hill police, what did she do? She went and called the city of Cincinnati police to come up there and find her car for her. So right off the bat, I just knew this is not someone that you can expect to be competent to do what she's supposed to do. Then what really ticked me off is she fired the chief of our fire chief for no reason. There was no reason whatsoever given. She brought him into his office, embarrassed him, and fired him.
Chris, at that debate, the mayor responded very strongly in defense of Cheryl Long, the city manager, saying that she's very qualified. How has the mayor responded to these comments by Brian Frank generally when it comes to the city manager's qualifications?
If you want to tick off Mayor Puraval, you could do that by criticizing the city manager. He thinks that she is very good at her job. He has a lot of confidence in her. And, it is clearly a sore point with him when Brian Frank criticizes Cheryl Long. I do wonder whether any of this has any relevance to people. I feel like the better criticisms would be, why aren't the potholes filled? Why didn't we clear the snow more quickly? Why didn't, the very basic services that Cheryl Long's job is to, deal with every day, those seem to be more potent attack points or more, something that would get voters' attention more than these details of her car being stolen. I'm not quite sure how that resonates with people.
Howard, did you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I agree with Chris. I mean, this is too much inside baseball, and nobody's sitting around sweating about where Cheryl Long's parks her car at night. There are other issues to talk about, and it's understandable that the mayor would be upset to keep her in that place, in that position to begin with.
Yeah. Well, there was a more recent NAACP debate, and in that debate, immigration was a big issue. Howard, I'm not sure if you watched that, if you followed it. I guess I'm interested in getting your take and Chris's take on how Brian Frank and the mayor, who were the only two candidates who attended that debate, how they talked about immigration.
Yeah, I wasn't there. I did hear parts of it. I know Chris was there.
Okay.
Yeah, the mayor, they were basically asked about Cincinnati's status as a sanctuary city, which is kind of a loaded term, and in practicality, it's really... it's whether our police cooperate with ICE, I think, that is kind of the issue. And the mayor's position has been that there is no law that requires the city police to do anything with ICE, basically. It's kind of almost more of a county issue, because ICE may want to grab people from prison or from the county jail who are here illegally. But as far as the city police go, the mayor's position is we don't have, the federal law does not require us to do anything with ICE. And if that changes, we will follow federal law. That's kind of been his standard line on it. Brian Frank's position. I'm sorry, Howard, go ahead.
No. Well, just real quickly, ICE has been around for many years, long before after Puraval, long before Donald Trump. And there is no legal requirement that they actually cooperate in ICE raids or arrests or detainments. That's just a fact.
And then as for Brian Frank, as you said, Lucy, he was the only Republican of the two that was there. His position is, we shouldn't basically poke the bear being President Trump. And if we do that, we risk losing federal funding for things. And so his position was, he wants to welcome people, but he doesn't see it as something where the city should get crossways with the federal government.
We've talked about what a heavily Democratic city Cincinnati is, how Hamilton County has become so heavily Democratic. But, nationally, Donald Trump did get reelected, is serving his second term. Howard, do you think that kind of national sentiment that put Donald Trump back in the White House could help either of these Republican candidates in the primary?
Not really, Lucy. I mean, I just don't see it. This is a very heavily Democratic city. Nobody in Western Hamilton County is going to vote in the Cincinnati mayoral primary. nobody in Indian Hill or Madeira or any place else outside of the city limits is going to be voting in this primary. This is going to be decided by people who are clearly committed Democratic voters.
Yeah. Anything you want to add, Chris?
I do think that Trump's victory and has really emboldened, one of his things, of course, is that cities are terrible places and they're war zones and all that. Of course, most of that's false. But, that I think that he has emboldened conservatives who live in cities to, kind of make a stand, even though they face tough odds. And I think that's what's happened here.
Well, my guests have been WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson and Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterich. Thank you both so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
Thanks, Lucy.
Up next, House Republicans are proposing deep cuts to a program aimed at improving Ohio's water quality. We'll discuss the potential impact. This is Cincinnati Edition.